that put you in a good mood. Is that Ricky Skaggs? Oh, that's great. Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder. Good way to start off the morning this morning. It is a Wednesday. It's the 15th of May. Very nice to have you with us. We have a great panel, and we are excited to talk to you this morning. Let me introduce everybody, and we'll get started. Terry Gibson is with us. He is a former New York State Senator. He is a SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. He is our good friend. Hello.
Thanks for having me. I just want to let you know I'm going to be working my posture today because my wife told me that she watches this. She's probably one of the two people that watch.
Yeah, don't. Right? No.
And she says that I'm always sitting like in a really sort of frumpy sort of position. So today I'm going to really work on my posture and try to do something different.
What's your wife's name?
Michelle.
And we should tell Michelle that our cameras are similar to like a Cumberland Farm security system. I don't know that it's a really good, very accurate you sort of look like a shmoo sitting there. I don't know.
A shmoo. Well,
yes.
Probably not the most flattering angle. Right?
No,
right.
No.
These but, headlights. But
we'll, she's always watching.
Well, that's good. Well, we thank her and welcome Michelle and thank you for being here. And,
I appreciate it.
And straighten up.
Yes.
Chris Churchill is with us. It's always a pleasure when Chris comes. He is a Times Union columnist. He's always on the tip of everyone's tongue talking about, have you read Chris Churchill today? And, well, we're lucky enough to have him on our program. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Oh, and look, it's Jen Smith. She's a Berkshire Eagle reporter, an award-winning one at that, and our good friend and a regular, and thank you for being here.
Oh, hey, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Alan Shartok is with us. He has exciting news and troubling news, and he will share all of that in a melange right now.
It's exciting, and it is troubling. Exciting is that some people have been putting some money into the lockbox, but we're nowhere near where we need to go. The day that the worldview, the Weltanschauung, gets shared by everybody and we all understand it can't be someone else who does it. And if it's $5 or $1,000, we got $1,000 yesterday. We have a pledge for $10,000 yesterday. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we need you. And we've got to fill it up. 1-800-323-9262. And do what you can to help. The goal's $500,000. Currently, we have 117,000 in the lockbox. The number to call is 1-800-323-9262. Operators are standing by. 1-800-323-9262. And here's the deal, folks. Unlike other radio stations, other places, we've all made this together. And, you know, I've been very critical, for example, of the museum over in Pittsfield, because they sold our patrimony. They sold the Rockwell things and paintings, which he had given to the community. And when we all raised these questions, they said, well, we can't raise money from anybody. Well, I don't think that's true, by the way. I think they could. But the one thing we know about WAMC is that everybody who is listening right now understands that this is no free ride for anybody. If you can't, you can't. But if you could do $5 or $1 or $1,000 or $10,000, right now we're depending on you, and I'm asking you to do it. Hey, this is Alan. I'm asking you to do it. Go right to the phone, 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org and do it that way, and we will love you even more than we love you now.
WAMC.org, 117 in already, but the fund drive begins June 3rd, so it's about 2.5 weeks from today. So we
That's
have a lot
scary.
Of, yes, it is. We have a lot of work to do in a short period of time, so snap to it. WAMC.org, you can give us a call, 1-800-323-9262, and we will be reminding you throughout the morning of the importance of this and getting us started off on a good, you know, there's so much going on in the world and there's so many hearings that are coming up and different things, and the less that we have to be on air during a fund drive and can just give you all of the stuff that you normally need, the better. So just think of that now. And
I was about to say that. How many places are there to come to get it all?
That's right.
And this is one of them. And this is probably the most important that you'll be associated with. So do what you can, please.
Here we are. What are you three doing?
I have some sort of calisthenics or something. His posture had reverted to old form, so I was correcting him.
Yeah, now I'm getting critiqued by the panel.
He's got to have a more open body posture. So
we're talking about
open.
The future of the radio station. It became a Zumba class in here. I don't know what happened.
Hey, can I say one more thing?
Yes, of course.
About this? You know, the thing of it is that we will have to raise $1 million. Now, I think when we started the lockbox, everybody said, well, that is so neat. Now we can get it done in a day, and we have. Day in a morning, but we have. That's what's been so fabulous about our wonderful audience. But sometimes people may forget, in which case we're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way, a week and a half. Remember that, Joe?
Oh, yeah. I wake up in the night and think of that sometimes. Yeah, no, they... yes, the pre-Trump days were not fun. 1-800-323-9262. And you can also go to the website, WMC.org. If you'd like to join in and comment on any of the things we're talking about today, all you have to do is go to panel@WAMC.org. panel@WAMC.org. Alabama yesterday voted last night to effectively ban abortion in the state. The Alabama Senate approved a measure on Tuesday that would outlaw almost all abortions in the state, setting up a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade, the case that recognized a woman's constitutional right to end a pregnancy. The legislation bans abortions at every stage of pregnancy and criminalizes the procedure for doctors who could be charged with felonies and face up to 99 years in prison. It includes an exception for cases where the mother's life is at serious risk, but not for cases of rape or incest, a subject of fierce debate among lawmakers. Yeah. In recent
days. You imagine you get raped by your uncle, you get raped by your father, you're 12 years old, and you have to have the baby? That's unbelievable.
The House approved the measure, the most far-reaching effort in the nation this year to curb abortion rights. Last month, it now moves to the desk of Governor Kay Ivey, a Republican, although the governor has not publicly commented to signing the legislation. Many Republican lawmakers do expect her support.
She's going to sign it. And the whole thing has been drafted just to go to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, that's interesting because the last two nominees, I believe, said that it was established law. Roe v. Wade was established law, a red-letter law. And so what they'll do is they'll keep Roe v. Wade, all right, but they will shave it down so far that there'll be nothing left, and they're not fooling anybody.
Well, one of the things with this Alabama bill, though, is that it doesn't really allow them to shave it down. I mean, if this is either all or nothing kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Well, no, I know what you mean, Chris, and I always know what you mean because you're profound and really...
That's one of the things that's remarkable about this bill is that they're really going for... I mean, they're throwing the touchdown pass.
And they've articulated that pretty strongly.
And a bright guy. But I will say... The Supreme Court is what it wants to do. They can say anything they want. They can take, you know, this all or nothing idea and say, well, we're not going for all or nothing, but we're going for 9/10 of all or nothing. And they can do that.
Well, I think it's important to point out, too, that this follows a series of things that have happened in Alabama. They recently, the voters recently approved an amendment to the Constitution saying that this is a pro-life state. So Alabama is officially, according to their Constitution, a pro-life state. So these individuals that are doing this are doing it knowing that they have the support of the majority of the voters behind them, as most everything that happens in electoral politics does happen. If the voters don't support it, it doesn't happen. But the idea that it's a Republican-controlled state, these Republican elected officials in this state who continually rail against government interference in all aspects of our lives, all of a sudden think that it's okay to have government interfere completely in the lives of a woman, to take away that choice that a woman and her family has. To me, seems to be so hypocritical and goes against everything that they talk about. And also, I was looking it up. The sanctity of life is what they continually talk about. But Alabama has the highest rate of death penalty executions per capita of any state in the country.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot that's terrifying about this. And I think, what didn't surprise me but still strikes me in reading the article is, you know, the invocation from the Republican, one of the Republicans' co-sponsors of the bill, you know, saying, you know, if God, you know, allows this miracle of life to take place in a woman's womb, then who are we to interfere? And, you know, that clearly just raises that issue of, and this is happening more and more in
Church
this country.
State.
Exactly. And, you know, we've seen that with some of the other, we've seen that quote and that word used in a lot of the other abortion bill cases, you know, going to Hobby Lobby, you know, other health care bills that are happening in the country. And that makes me pretty fearful as a citizen if I don't subscribe to that.
For what it's worth, and this is just a little factoid, but of the 35 members of the Senate in Alabama, only 4 members are female.
Mm-hmm. But the woman, the House sponsor of the bill is a woman.
Yeah,
and the governor is a woman.
Yeah, the governor is
important
a woman.
To point that out because
I'm
we
actually
easily
not,
can
not
say
entirely
it's all
entirely convinced the governor is going to sign it. I think she could use the rape, the lack of a rape exception to veto it.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. I'm not an
she's
expert
gonna,
on her, but I wouldn't be surprised if she did. Just for that reason. I mean, that would do is they would kick it back and then they would. Because apparently they debated that part of the bill quite extensively.
And even the parts of that are, you know, legal if a woman's life is in jeopardy. And I think it was mentioned this morning through another interview. But the idea that it's still pretty subjective on, you know, what determines life-threatening case from a medical
sure.
standpoint by non-medical experts. And that's also worrisome as well.
Yeah. So don't these individuals have daughters? Don't they have granddaughters? What happens if your daughter finds themselves in a medical condition where their life is literally in jeopardy and a doctor has to decide whether they're willing to risk spending 99 years in prison for saving this girl's life or not? And I mean, these types of things are just, to me, mind-boggling.
And that kind of harsh criminalization of that kind of sentence is not subjected to some of the like most heinous crimes, you know, that take place
right.
in our nation, including assault against a pregnant woman or sexually molesting a child. You don't get those kinds of sentences, and that's just also mind-boggling. In
99 years for performing abortions, doctors face the threat of a 10-year term for attempting to perform one. Women who receive abortions would not be prosecuted.
This is also the state, just the history of Alabama, that not that long ago, and while this same governor was there, if you remember Judge Roy Moore, mm-hmm. this is the state that allowed Judge Roy Moore to—
How could we forget?
They allowed him to put a monument of the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court building of Alabama. And that governor, I believe, supported that move at the time as well. So I think she'll sign it.
She's going to sign it.
And I think this is all about positioning Alabama to be the state that really tests Roe v. Wade, which mm-hmm. is what this whole bill is about.
Well, yeah. And as you said, though, the voters there support this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not like they're going rogue or something. This is they're doing what their constituents want them to do. And we do live in a country where different parts of the country have very, very different views on issues.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up because, as you know, New York under Cuomo has been very, I think, very good about making sure that the Roe v. Wade principles were ensconced here in New York.
Vermont as well.
And however, you know, you got a 15-year-old scared out of their minds who's now pregnant. They don't have the money to come to New York or to Vermont or to any other state. And they, of course, have to deal with the very people who may have put them into that. I'm not saying everybody gets pregnant is raped, but, you know, there's more of it than you may want to think.
Yeah, the idea that you're going to, you know, completely ban abortions is really just short-sighted. There will continue to be abortions. They'll either be legal or be illegal. And if they're illegal, it means that people are going to be putting their lives in jeopardy.
But, you know, I was watching the debate on the TV about this rape thing. It's extraordinary. You know, with impunity, these guys proceed and act as if it's somehow, you know, the woman's or the kid's problem. It's unbelievable.
And,
go ahead.
I just also think it's a myopic conversation, too. I mean, it's really about taking a hard line on this piece of legislation and not expanding the conversation to some of the other social issues and health issues that surround abortion, that surround, you know, the fact that some things are moving right in that, you know, the idea to lower the abortion rate, to make them safe, to, you know, protect women's health. Those conversations are being left out of, you know, the broader approach. And again, we're not talking about just, again, laws that protect women against things like rape and incest. It's almost like they're contradicting.
Well, you know, I can't help but remember when I was in the state Senate, I listened to so many arguments about this on both sides of the issue of abortion. And the ones that I remember the most were a lot of men, older men, would come to me and make the argument about how women had absolutely no rights. That's basically what they would say, that is that once a woman enters the bedroom, she gives away all of her rights. That's what they thought. That's what they think. I mean, there are individuals that truly believe that men should have all the power and that women should have no power to make any decisions about anything that happens to them.
In fairness, though, if you look at polling on abortion, there isn't a big difference between how women feel about it and how men feel about it. I mean, the number of women who call themselves pro-life is roughly equal to the number of men who call themselves pro-life. It isn't to just break it down and say, well, it's men trying to impose. I don't think that's entirely accurate. I mean, I think that this remains one of the more divisive issues in the country. It's a big reason a lot of people voted for held their noses and voted for Trump. And and like I said before, there are big divisions in different parts of the country. This is an issue that is not going to be resolved anytime soon. But I don't think it's fair to just say, well, it's patriarchal men who just want to impose
But Chris, take a look at the Alabama. And the overwhelming male dominance of that
house. With a female governor. New York never had a female governor.
I mean, one governor doesn't equal the.
No, I know that. I know that. Yeah. But, you know, in New York, who are we to. We've never had a female governor.
But again, I think.
What? You mean because we've never had a female governor?
No, but I'm just saying, you know, we tend to. I think those of us here in the Northeast tend to look down at other parts of the country a little bit too much.
Well, in Alabama, yes.
Yeah, but
it's true.
But you know, every city in Texas has had a female mayor. New York City hasn't had a female mayor. Boston hasn't had a female mayor. Philadelphia hasn't had a female mayor.
No, I get that.
Ten seconds. Go ahead.
The horse is saddled. So bring it home now.
They
can do anything they want if we had a female mayor.
We got to take a break. We'll work this out, and we'll be back. You're listening to the Roundtable Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Terry Gibson. We are very happy to have you with us. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to letters in just a few moments. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. Chris, right before the break, I cut you off. You were going to make a point. I know because you took a deep breath as you were ready to talk.
I don't remember what it was, though.
So. Oh, okay.
Well, I'm glad.
I thought it was going to be mind-blowing, and just it would have rocked all of you all.
Well, we were talking about governors. We were talking about female governors in states. Alan was questioning as to what, you know.
No, I was just making the point that, you know, we'd have never had a female governor of New York, and sometimes I think we get a little bit condescending towards other parts of the country when we don't look at our own faults a little bit.
Yeah, but it's the policy. It's not whether we had a female.
No, I know. I know that, but.
I mean, you're quite right. We should. But it's the policy that is at question here.
Yeah, I get that.
You do?
Yeah. All right. Well, that concluded that much quicker than I thought you were going to. I thought that we'd have a good, vigorous debate going on.
The break took the steam out of the debate,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Well, all right.
Those breaks.
Yeah, they do a lot, don't they? Okay, so there is that story. Panel at WAMC.org. We'd love your letters. Let's go to Trump's tariffs. This, of course, still in the news. One seam as leverage may be here to stay is the headline this morning. And just reading a little bit from the New York Times, President Trump's tariffs were initially seen as a cudgel to force other countries to drop their trade barriers, but they increasingly look like a more permanent tool to shelter American industry, block imports, and banish an undesirable trade deficit. More than 2 years into the Trump administration, the United States has emerged as a nation with the highest tariff rate among developed countries, outranking Canada, Germany, and France, as well as China, Russia, and Turkey. And with further trade confrontations brewing, the rate may only increase from here. On Tuesday, the president continued to praise his trade war with China, saying that the 25% tariffs he imposed on $250 billion worth of Chinese goods would benefit the United States, and that he was looking very strongly at imposing additional levies on nearly
every Chinese import. So back to the strategy of doubling down.
He's a poor gambling man who is, again, taking a gamble on other people's resources that will have long-term effects far after he's out of office. But I think, there's a lot to unpack here with this trade war. And there are a lot of bad tweets with bad information that went out about this, from misquoting what the trade deficits actually were. He's obsessed with this number of like $500 billion, it's not there, although it is definitely increasing. So we could hit $500 billion, but that's wrong in his narrative. We also can't forget that even when you have trade deficits, there's still an exchange of goods. So there's just a lot of context that's being taken out of this argument.
Yeah, the Trump seems to misunderstand. Well, first of all, I'll say right off the bat, tariffs don't really upset me that much, mm-hmm. and this isn't something I'm like worked up about. But he does seem to think that if I give you $10 for something and you give me those headphones, mm-hmm. that somehow I've been ripped off.
Yes.
Where in reality, we've exchanged something.
You've exchanged goods.
Yeah. There is a point to be made that there are underlying issues here that almost everybody agrees need to be resolved. China does steal intellectual property, mm-hmm. and that is a big concern. There are other parts of our relationship with them that could be worked on. The question is whether this strategy is going to be
effective. It's a strategy that's going to be.
Yeah, or if it's just a war just to have a war. But again, tariffs don't bother me. Mm-hmm. If cheap junk from China costs a little bit more, then I'm not that upset about
mm-hmm.
it.
A strategy implies that there is a goal. At least that's how I think of a strategy.
Well, I think there is a goal.
Well, I'm not sure what the goal is. I'd like to hear the goal be clarified in a way. Because if the goal is free trade, that's not working, right? What we're doing is making it harder to have free trade right now. Certainly trade is more expensive right now than it's ever been.
Well, it definitely makes it harder to understand whatever stance we're taking on free trade, which is very unclear as well.
And the president also keeps saying things like, if the companies don't want to pay tariffs, if we want to get rid of tariffs, well, then just come back here and make everything in America, which, theoretically sounds great. But we have to remember how we got to this place in the first place, is that corporations have continued to find ways to outsource their manufacturing to places where they can get it done cheaper.
Get better prices, absolutely.
And so, go ahead, Alan, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just saying, Chris, here's what I don't get. I think you may have a point about so you pay a little bit more. But not the farmers. They've got soybeans, coming out the side of their silos.
But
we
have to remember
that's
a Trump-created problem, too. And sorry to cut you off, Chris.
Yeah,
but not
trying
to cut me off. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The farmers. The farmers that we have around here, the people who grow broccoli, who raise vegetables, who do real farm work, aren't selling their products to China. What you're talking about when you're talking about soybeans is big ag.
Agribusiness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and are we supposed to cry for them? I guess we should worry a little bit about the economic impact on them, but it doesn't upset me that much.
Well,
if their market is curtailed. We're talking about factory farms. We're talking about the kind of farms that contribute to global warming. If they can sell fewer hogs to China, that might actually be a good thing.
You are a bit of a curmudgeon, of course, but I do.
I'm not a curmudgeon. I just think it's funny that all of a sudden everybody in the left sounds like they're on the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. Like everybody's this free trader all of a sudden.
It's a little bit strange
to me.
I'm a simple man. I like to watch what's going on here, and I watch the television, at night, and they have all these little farmers on who are telling you about how they're getting screwed because they can't sell their soybeans.
The part of the problem too
is stop growing soybeans and grow broccoli.
Yeah, last summer you can't lose track of the fact that a ton of cuts were made to those industries from the Trump administration. Giving fair cost for commodities. I think those are sort of the bigger issues. And again, when you're talking about deficits, I think if we're not talking about the national deficit and what's actually driving that, then that's part of the bigger problem that, again, people don't understand because people aren't financially or economically literate as much as they should be in this country. You look at our current national deficit now, which is like, what, $72 trillion, which is $20 trillion more than in the economic recession in 2008. What's driving that or what's affecting those costs? You know, you have to take in the fact that it's government debt, it's mortgage debt, and, you know, it's debt that's affecting consumer rates as well.
You know, also on the farming front, back to that as well, every interview and every story that I've read everywhere continues when anybody is speaking on behalf of farmers in an advocacy type of position, you more often than not hear them supporting Trump's policies.
No
right
question.
Now.
It's no question.
They say, yes, it's painful, but we think this is the right thing to do. I wanted just to point out, just as a reality check, I thought it was interesting. I worry that the president doesn't have a full comprehension of the magnitude of what he's dealing with. And I also worry that the American people, the voters, don't understand the magnitude of it either. I just want to make sure everybody understands the population difference between the United States and China. It is enormous. You could fit more than 125 New York cities in China. Just a way to sort of think about it. The size, you know, New York City has over 8 million people. China has over a billion people.
And the point is?
The point is that China is humongous. It is enormous. We're not, you know, I think it's important to realize the scale of the country that we are at war with right now when it comes to trade. And if we should ever take that beyond trade and go into a physical battle war, we are up against something that we have never encountered before. This is an enormous country.
That's the worry. I mean, the worry is that when free trade stops, you increase the likelihood of something like a Cold War worse. Mm-hmm. You know, and that is the risk that, you know, there's an old saying, or not an old saying, a relatively new saying, that the two countries that have a McDonald's have never gone to war against each other. I don't know how true it is, but I think it's a Thomas Friedman saying. Which points out that, you know, free trade is good for world peace in a lot of ways. And so there's a risk that, you know, a tense relationship with China is dangerous. But on the other hand, there are issues that most economists agree are, you know, need to be resolved, and including the intellectual property issue.
Yeah, I agree. There are issues. I think everyone agrees these issues need to be resolved. But is this the right strategy to do it? And is it clearly being executed in a way where every day Trump tweeting out about whatever chaotic thought he has, is that really effective? The other thing to keep in mind, just one more point, is that what makes this also unlevel is that the Chinese president has managed to eliminate all term limits in China.
Well, yeah.
So now in the Constitution, he's basically there for life. So he will be there for eternity, likely, based on what I'm reading in terms of how the voters, you know, deal with, you know, the situation in China.
Well, Trump intends to be there for life, too.
Yeah, so,
No, but your point is extremely well taken, because he cannot get off the dime and concede in any way to the United States, because part of his popularity is he's standing up to this country.
Right, right. So, and I know that Trump would like to be there for life. And, you know, I think part of the thing that, you know, keeps him wanting to have this relationship with China and with Korea and with Russia, that these are all leaders that he admires because of how they've been able to position themselves in a way to have total power.
All right. We have a lot of letters on a lot of subjects, so let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get to those. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Jen Smith, and Alan Chartok, who has a fistful of letters.
I do. I don't think we've had this many letters for a long, long time. I did want to read one.
We've been talking about abortion and trade,
yeah.
So
I did want to read one from Caroline, who says, many farmers in Rensselaer and Washington County grow soybeans.
Correct.
It's cavalier to just say grow broccoli. With the current immigration policy, who do you suppose will harvest those vegetables? And that's from Caroline. Okay. I thought I'd take that one out of order, Chris. Okay.
And he's shaking his head. Go ahead.
And Stephen says, criminalizes going out of state for abortion as well. Does the bill criminalize going out of state for abortion? Does anybody know that answer?
I don't think they addressed that.
I don't think that's constitutional.
I don't know how you could do that.
Oh, yeah.
Once
yeah.
you leave the state, it's another state's mm-hmm. issue.
Okay, and then Chris says, Alabama, maybe they jumped the gun on their ruling. The Supreme Court isn't stacked enough yet to overturn Roe. I think they are.
Well, they're gambling that it is.
Yeah, I think they are.
Is there a guarantee that it'll get to the Supreme Court?
No. The Supreme Court has
they have to decide whether they want to take it.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they could just—they may just choose to duck it. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Right. I mean, a lower court will say that this is unconstitutional and prevent it from going into effect.
Right. Right. No, that's right. And what they'll do is, if they don't want it, they'll say we're going to leave it with the lower court.
But at a certain point, when you have these kind of state laws kind of piling up, you know, we've had what, six or seven states do the heartbeat laws. I mean,
Georgia, right?
Georgia, Ohio, a number of other states. At a certain point, it seems like the Supreme Court can't continue to ignore it.
They are gambling that this will get to the Supreme Court and that it will have the support of the Supreme Court. They're also gambling. I've heard several of the bill sponsors talk about that they're gambling on the fact of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health. They're gambling on that. I mean, they see a possibility for Trump to be able to appoint a third Supreme Court justice, and they know it will take some time for this to make its way to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. Chris says. We did that. We did Chris. And now we've gone to John. Once this forced birth bill is passed into law and goes into the courts, when it gets to the Supreme Court, those leading the case against it should withdraw, saying, there is no point in continuing as we will not receive a fair hearing before the court. I think such a rebuke would be more than appropriate.
Well, I mean, you've got to fight. I mean, that's your last chance. I mean, if you don't fight it there, then there's no
there'll
place
be a lot
fight.
Of fighting.
Yeah, so I could not support that.
Gina says, abortion. So to be clear, abortion bans that do make exceptions for rape and incest are morally bankrupt as well. They say women can only have control of their bodies if they've been first violated. Interesting. And then from Matt in Florida. The abortion legislation is a product of the born-again evangelical Christian movement, which seeks to impose its religious values on the entire country. What happened to the constitutional provision of church-state separation? This is the same hypocritical movement that supports the current occupant in the White House, who is perhaps the most anti-Christian president ever. And Joel says, Alabama, good morning. The people who say they're pro-life or not, they are pro-birth. They do not care about anyone over 9 months old. And then we heard from John, who said, procreation. It should be obvious to all those who believe in God that God left decisions regarding procreation to us, and specifically the women who bear the responsibility biologically. And so far, given the fact that there are upwards of 6 billion of us on the planet, whereas there was less than a billion only 2 centuries ago, we're doing a pretty awful job of planning given the limitations of the planet that support us. The solution to this demonstrable lack of social consensus is this. If your moral code tells you abortion is wrong, then don't have one. Lead by example, not domination or dicta. And that's from John. And then we heard from Bill, who said, if the Alabama anti-women's health bill is successful, a rapist could receive less jail time than the doctor performing an abortion after a rape. Boy, are you right about that, Bill. It's the first thing I thought of.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. And then Tara writes to us, abortion. I agree with Terry that Republicans have hypocritical beliefs because they are pro-life but anti-welfare and anti-affordable daycare, etc. So what do they think is going to happen to an unprepared mother? They better get ready to change their minds about public assistance. Thanks for your thoughtful conversation. Take care. And that's from Tara. The new stuff just arrived, Joe?
Yeah, I got that. I'm going to trade your files. There.
Okay,
there
thank you.
You.
Thank you very
file,
much. Thank you very file. Much. Yep. Okay, and then we heard from Judy. Judy says, abortion restriction is a form of control. When men can force women to carry all pregnancies to term, men will have full control of all aspects of a woman's life. With the responsibilities and efforts that it takes to raise a baby, men can effectively subjugate women to poverty or reliance on men. These are scary times, my friends. That's from Judy. And then we heard from Bob. The question raised by Chris about Alabama's Republican legislation would do if it were their daughters who were raped or at serious medical risk from a pregnancy is easily answered. They would secretly fly her to a state where abortion is legal and then pray nobody at home finds out about the hypocrisy.
Mm.
Yes, Chris, did you want to say something?
No, that was Terry who said that, but that's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But well, it doesn't matter.
Well, whatever.
I did want to point out, as you research, you know, this story from many different outlets, there's a quote from one of the Democratic state senators that did introduce an amendment to try to stop this bill. I think it's interesting, and it addresses some of the things that have been said. She introduced amendments that would require the state to expand Medicaid, force legislators who vote for the measure to pay the state's legal bills, or make it a crime for men to get vasectomies.
Yeah, no, I've heard all of that.
All of those fail.
And I was watching the debate, and somebody actually mentioned the castration question. And
yeah.
I'm not quite sure what that was all about. But anyway, Susan says, abortion. The people who voted for this abortion bill are hypocrites. How many innocent people, including babies and young children, are killed in our foreign wars? Where's the outrage about that? And then we heard from Caro, who said, farmers. It's not as simple as farmers. Judy switching from soybeans to broccoli. Large-scale farmers are capitalized. I'm just reading you every word that's down here.
No, and I was being somewhat facetious when I said
that. Well,
you
not
know.
You.
But it is true that the we're talking about big agriculture for the most part that's going to be affected. It's not the small farmers that we should care most about who are sending their products to China. You know, it's big hog producers. It's the kind of companies that we complain about all the rest of the year, and then, well, we eat their meat. But I mean, you know, my sympathy is a little bit limited for Smithfield Farms and some of the massive polluting companies that are going to be hurt most by this.
And Caro concludes, agreeing with you, I think. I agree that we should produce less of an industrially farmed commodity surplus, but there has to be a transition grants and programs to support it. Yeah, that'll be the day we do that. And Mike says, tariffs and Trump products. Several months ago, Jimmy Kimmel bought 10 items with a with a Trump brand on them. 8 of the 10 were made in China. Ivanka has some kind of franchise. You remember that, right? They gave her all kinds of kinds of good stuff. Or whatever they call it in China for sunglasses and something else. Will those tariffs affect their items? Fair is fair. And that's Mike from Glen Falls. And Roger says, the idea that goods from China is cheap junk is decades past being true. Think 5G, A1 artificial intelligence, solar panels, electric cars, and mobile phones. Saying cheap junk is very cavalier, and that's Roger from Pleasant Valley, where everybody smiles. And Wendy said tariffs. Sounds like it's easy to companies to just come back and manufacture in the United States, like it's a flip of the switch to make the change. Those changes would cost companies millions of dollars to offset any benefit they would get from manufacturing in the U.S. It's his simple solution to make his base think that these companies are making a choice when, for many of them, at this point, there really is no choice.
Well, I just wonder that if, you know, Trump talks about bringing companies back here if they don't want to deal with these tariffs, will he support, a living wage increase? Will he support unionization of members? I mean, these are things that typically he and his party are not going to support. And so to say that just bring them back here and start your companies here is really just not that simple.
Mm-hmm. And then Sue says, thank you, Mr. Churchill. That's you.
Yep.
For understanding a different point of view. Residents of different states have very different takes on morality, law, and that's why sometimes the Supreme Court shouldn't step on why it should be up to the various states to work out their laws. Sue from Poughkeepsie.
It's the federalism argument, you know, that the people of Alabama shouldn't have to live under the same laws as the people of New York live under, and there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, if we're a country where different parts of the country believe in very, very different things— And one way that we can all kind of get along is to allow people to be different.
Yeah, but what about the 15-year-old?
Right. Obviously, you can't violate people's constitutional rights in any state. But, you know, take legalizing marijuana. You know, it's happening. It's going to happen. It's happened in Colorado. It's probably not going to happen in Alabama. I'm okay with that.
Okay. China, says Dave. I guess I'm not sophisticated. For who knows how long, American consumers have been content purchasing cheaper Chinese products rather than American ones. For who knows how long, American companies have been content offshoring their favorite factories to China. rather than pay higher American wages. And now we're complaining China isn't purchasing more of our stuff. Frankly, it's all a bit rich for me. And to the extent China is stealing our intellectual property or otherwise not abiding by trade agreements, perhaps if Mr. Trump hadn't alienated most of our allies, we could have a more constructive trade policy towards China. Heaven forbid Americans might be paying more for American products. Dave.
There's a lot in there that I think he makes very good points on a lot of different fronts.
Time for one more letter, and then we have to take a break.
I used to be a farmer, says Nick. Please tell Chris Churchill he's dead wrong about the big ag selling soybeans. Trump tariffs also hurt hog farmers, almond farmers, a variety of other farmers, and, in capital letters, it will cost U.S. consumers billions in higher prices. Do your homework, Chris.
And on that note, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Ricky Skaggs bringing us in this morning. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Terry Gibson. Alan has some letters. I'm sure there'll be a new crop coming in momentarily, but we'll do those and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
So Chris from Troy writes, I live in New York now, but was raised in Iowa, simply saying that farmers should grow broccoli instead of soybeans simply because the administration has ruined the ability of farmers to sell soybeans is glib and uninformed. Farmers in Iowa cannot...
I think you read that one.
I did this?
Yeah, you did it from your phone.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, thank you, Joe, for so forgiving. And Dorothy said, Trump and tariffs. Dear panel, along with everything else, Trump has no clue as to how farms work, be they small family farms or large corporate farms. Agriculture, large or small, is depending on all important nature. Whatever money he throws at big ag will be gone in an instant. Dorothy. That's it. That's all I got.
All right, let's move on to other subjects. We have many to discuss. We will talk about Donald Trump Jr. agreeing to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee once again. He has reached a deal with the Senate Intelligence Committee to appear for a second closed-door interview in June, that according to people close to the matter, ending a tense standoff between the president's son and the panel's Republican chairman. Under the deal's terms, Trump Jr. will testify for up to 4 hours and address a limited number of questions. The committee's chairman and vice chairman, Senators Burr and Warner, had no comment. A lawyer for Trump Jr. declined to comment. The agreement ends a months-long process to secure Trump Jr.'s testimony. It also quells a simmering crisis for the GOP after several Republican senators openly urged the president's son either not to comply with the committee's summons or to invoke the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination if he appeared. This, of course, all has to do with the infamous Trump Tower meeting of June 2016.
What I read into that is that they have provided him with a list of questions that they both agree to ask and agree not to ask. I mean, they have definitely shared back and forth conversation about these are the kind of questions I'll ask, that I'll answer, and these are the kind of questions that I will not answer. And to me, that just reeks of sort of an entire sham, really,
I'm sorry, Jen, but you can imagine somebody aggressively asking him a question which he agreed not to, which he said he was not going to answer.
Right, there are Democrats on that committee.
Yeah, and he's going to say, I wasn't supposed to answer that question. That won't look good.
Well, it's all in private, though. It's not going to be televised.
That's sort of the question, too, is like, why... Why go? What else are we going to learn? What else is going to happen if you're asking questions behind a closed door? You're limiting the range of questions and question asking. So why this change of heart?
Do we think we're going to? I mean, even under the best of circumstances, do you think we learn a lot from this that we don't already know about that Trump meeting, though?
It's been talked about and investigated
pretty thoroughly at this point.
Yeah, but the question is, did he perjure himself? That's the question.
But if he had, wouldn't that have been something that would have come up during the Mueller investigation?
I mean, that was implicated.
Yes, it was.
Well, the Republicans are not doing a good job of explaining to us why they wanted to have this hearing in the first place, because they don't want us to have the information we need to figure this out, because ultimately what they're doing is protecting the president.
Well, except that the president is furious with their chairman, with Burr, And the reason he's so angry is he got a Republican. And Republicans are supposed to be an absolute lockstep in the Senate. And I believe that Burr is not running for re-election.
No.
So therefore, that's when people get courage, when they don't need, you know, to be elected without worrying about primary or anything else.
I'm not quite prepared to put the courage badge in him just yet. I don't like the way this whole hearing is unfolding.
Right. And why?
To me, if he was really courageous, he would insist on having him there to be fully available to answer whatever questions need to be answered.
Well, I agree with you, but now that leads everybody to start thinking of how they got to him, right?
Right.
I mean, how did they get to him? Up to now, you know, he's had courage. Everybody's been yelling, he's a terrific guy. But this, as you point out correctly, Senator, everybody we know here has to understand that what's so funny?
When you call him Senator, I just think there's something, so a blow is coming somehow.
Well, no,
an insult is good.
It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. So, yeah, so no, I think obviously they got to him. And the question is how they did it.
Well, there had to be more, people involved. Like Mitch McConnell, for instance, you know, I'm
sure
is involved in these negotiations.
Sure.
So the Senate Intelligence Committee chair does not have absolute power over everything. I mean, there are other people that have some say-so in how this plays out. And so I'm not quite ready to give him that badge of courage. I was hopeful in the beginning, but now it seems as if it's all just going to kind of go under the radar and we'll never really know what happened.
Every morning I come from Great Barrington through West Stockbridge, and then I make a left turn on 102. And then don't you see? On the bridge there, as you go over, it says Turtle Crossing.
Okay. Beware of the turtles.
Turtle Crossing. Of course, there are those people who think, you know.
It's a Mitch McConnell joke.
Okay. I get it. I'm sorry. I thought I was in an alternative universe.
Turtle Crossing.
You know, there was a point when you were making that turn, and all I could think of was that big cannon on the corner.
There's that too.
But,
okay.
All right. Let's go to other. So then there's also the obstruction investigation. The House panel is investigating obstruction claims against Trump's lawyers. This, of course, all comes out of Michael Cohen's testimony and the falsehoods that were a part of that testimony that ultimately brought Mr. Cohen to jail, which he is currently serving time in. The House Intelligence Committee is investigating whether lawyers tied to President Trump and his family helped obstruct the panel's inquiry into Russian election interference by shaping false testimony, a series of previously undisclosed letters from its chairman, Sho. The line of inquiry stems from claims made by the president's former personal lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, who told Congress earlier this year that the lawyers in question helped edit false testimony that he provided to Congress in 2017 about a Trump Tower project in Moscow. Mr. Cohen said they also dangled a potential pardon to try to ensure his loyalty. In recent weeks, the committee sent lengthy document requests to four lawyers. Jay Sekulow, who represents the president, Alan Futterfuss, who represents Donald Trump Jr., Alan Garten, the top lawyer of the Trump organization, and Abby Lowell, who represents Ivanka Trump. The lawyers all took part in a joint defense agreement by the president's allies to coordinate responses to inquiries by Congress and the Justice Department. Among other things, it appears that your clients may have reviewed, shaped, and edited the false statement that Cohen submitted to the committee, including causing the omission of material facts. That, according to Adam Schiff, the Intelligence Committee's chairman.
Well, first we had the Mueller investigation. Now we have everybody investigating the various investigations. So the FBI's investigation is now being investigated by the Justice Department, and now the House is investigating the investigation by Mueller. Everybody's investigating everybody, and nothing's really getting resolved.
It's all noise at this point. It really
and
is.
And
I think there's more than 20 separate investigations going on.
The American public has to be thoroughly confused and fed up. And all the time, the Democrats continue to miss out on opportunities to take control of a message that's about solving the day-to-day problems that are facing all of America.
And how would you do that?
Well, you would start talking about the issues on a daily basis and making sure that is what gets front page, front website coverage instead of the investigations. It doesn't mean you have to stop doing the investigations. It doesn't mean you should stop doing all of the hearings, but start talking about the issues.
Okay, I don't disagree with you about that. But the real issue here is Trump and his malevolence. And what this guy is doing is confusing the issue by having his people do the investigations of the investigators. We can just see him, you see the plume coming out of his head as he gets more and more into trouble. And he sees this is the way to obscure the whole thing.
Yeah. Self-preservation,
it is, but I think for the Democrats to think that somehow they can make this their key talking point and have the American public understand it, I think is just not practical. I think they need to keep doing the work behind the scenes, but start rallying around the issues that people are talking about, the economy, healthcare, the environment.
That was supposed to be their leading cause for the Democrats was healthcare, and like 3 months ago, and all of a sudden, when's the last time you've heard anyone say something substantial about that?
Get the media to cover these things, and right now I feel like they're just not being successful in doing that. And the Republicans love it because the last thing they want is the Democrats out there during the presidential cycle talking about these issues. They would much rather have us talking about the various investigations, which they know the American public is just fed up with.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a swamp where nothing can get done, where there is no, everything's at a stalemate right now, you know, and I agree with you. I think if the Democrats want to go forward with a message, I think they should start passing legislation. Mm-hmm. Well, every day, pass something, in the House at least, and then point out the fact that these things, if they're popular, are not getting passed by the Senate. Put the pressure on. This blizzard of investigations is getting nowhere, and I just think it's fruitless and it's also not necessary.
It's confusing. I mean, the five of us in this room follow this stuff closely. I'll admit, I'm confused.
What are we even trying to learn? I don't even know.
It's just like, what investigation is this investigation? Is that investigation? Mm-hmm. And so I'm picking up on what you said a moment ago, Terry, so what do the American people think about this? I mean, we're paying very close attention to what was the average person? It just comes out as a haze, a fog. And I agree. I mean, unless people start talking about what is being done, what isn't being done.
Well, you know, there's a reason why professional law enforcement investigators do investigations in private. You know, the FBI, whoever does investigations on the law enforcement side, they do them in private. There's a reason for that. That they know that talking about them in the media every day, politicizing them every day, is counterproductive. It doesn't work.
Right. So Mueller did his work, kind of quietly and behind the scenes. We all got to speculate about what he was doing, but... Right, exactly. It wasn't done all out for everybody to see.
Let me take a contrary view for a change. I believe that what won the election for the House of Representatives was an incredible wellspring of antipathy towards Donald Trump. And I believe that you don't want to let that go, and I believe you don't let him obscure it. But in the end, he is really a despicable president, and that what you do is you stay on that message, because when you bifurcate the message, people get confused. Stay with the fact that Trump has been alleged to have been breaking the laws and everything else.
I don't think I agree with you. I mean, I think there was a lot of people who did vote out of dislike for Trump, but I think a lot of these districts were swing districts or even red-leaning districts, and the candidates who won talked about things like health care. They talked about actual issues. I think a lot of them de-emphasized Trump.
Mm-hmm. But I think
and
the
that's
problem,
how they won, and I think that's how you win in areas like that.
I think the problem now is that even those sort of like noble attempts have been obscured by the constant daily attacks on all the new House members. We are constantly seeing these tropes against like Ilhan Omar and AOC and some of the others, where it's taking away from the issues, and it's saying, oh, she said this or he said that, and I think that's part of the Republican strategy, is to tear apart the House so that they can't focus on the issues.
Yeah, but it isn't like AOC is trying to blend into the background and just quietly do her work. I mean, she's drawing a lot of attention to herself.
But I think it's
and
it's
she's
in
taking attention
to
there are she's one congressperson who seems. I think Nancy Pelosi has said something like, more than three, has tried to say that she doesn't necessarily represent all the new people who are elected. Mm-hmm. Most of them are quite moderate,
true.
Most of them are elected on issues like health care. And I don't know that people who voted for them We're voting for them just to support a flurry of investigations that mires everything down.
But wait, are you telling me you don't think the fact that the House of Representatives flipped was really because of people's antipathy to
Some
Trump?
Some of it was, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think the successful candidates, they talked about issues. I think they talked about things that people care about. I don't think – if you look at lists of issues that people care about, the Russia investigation and polling comes up dead last. I don't think this is what's – this is something that people – the average voter cares about. I think the base cares about it, and I think that's what a lot of Democrats are responding to, but I don't think swing voters care about it.
I agree with Alan in the fact that – I think Donald Trump's unlikability is very powerful and did help create a blue House of Representatives. And I think it will flip a lot of seats in the upcoming elections as well. But I think that the Democrats can reinforce the message that Donald Trump is a horrible person by connecting him with his lack of action on the issues that matter to people.
Sure.
He's not addressing health care. He's not addressing the environmental damage that's happening on our planet right now. He's not addressing the housing crisis. He's not addressing the education crisis. They can tie him to those things without constantly just talking about their investigation.
No, I agree with that.
All right, we only have 5 minutes and we have letters, so let's get to those and we'll round out the show.
Patrianne says, adoption and abortion. As one who was adopted from a closed Alabama state, we don't have the right to know about our family roots. Has it been mentioned if Georgia is going to permit open or closed adoptions? Abortions need to be permitted for the woman's choice. It doesn't mean they will choose it, but they should be allowed in an event. It needs to be an option for the person who has the right of autonomy of their bodies, no matter what their circumstances or age.
I don't think they've thought about it that far.
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, here's somebody who was born through regular pregnancy and ended up being adopted. And she's saying, and I've heard it said 1,000 times, I wouldn't be here, otherwise. Mm-hmm. I'm fiercely determined to help on the abortion question, but it is something that you hear from time to time. Brian says, in regards to pork production, I'd read recently that the large hog farms in the Midwest are actually owned by Chinese companies. The article pointed out more precisely that the farmers own and are responsible for land in vast waste lagoons, while China owns and profits from the pork products. Not a fan of large industrial meat production, but it seems like a food insecurity problem, especially in the midst of a trade war. And that's from Brian and Wendell. Then we heard from Janine, Heartbeat Law States. Each of these states is confident they can overturn Roe v. Wade, which does say that states can or cannot do regarding pregnancy terminations. But the decision was based on a woman's right to privacy. In today's world, we have HIPAA laws that further extend everyone's right to medical privacy. It also says doctors are bound to explain all options for a medical condition. So how do they plan to prosecute anyone when their medical history cannot be presented in public? In other words, court. We've heard of pleading the Fifth, but could they plead HIPAA? Well, I don't think they're going to have any problem if somebody has what they would define as an illegal abortion of finding somebody to say that this thing happened. It's disgusting. Soybeans. Yesterday, a comment was made about rotting soybeans and starving people worldwide. The farmers need to sell to someone else. Simple business diversification and/or feed the world group needs to step up and offer to buy and use the soybeans, even if at reduced cost. Simple, proactive solutions. And that's Rob from Western Massachusetts. Hello, panel, says Mark. There were abortions before Roe v. Wade. There would be abortions if it was overturned, though less safe. You can say that again, less safe, people dying from them. What liberties are you ready to give up in pursuit of this unrealistic goal? Take it to its logical conclusion. Pregnant women would have to be monitored to make sure they didn't smoke or drink. Maybe they should be breeder camps to prevent women harming fetuses. Alternatively, there are many examples of places where there are many fewer abortions through comprehensive sex ed and available contraception. And then finally, Joe, something I haven't heard yet. Oh, no, maybe not finally. Something I haven't heard yet. The tariffs hurt consumers. Who benefits? The U.S. Treasury isn't just another tax that hasn't been approved by Congress. Rich in Schenectady. Maybe I didn't read that correctly.
No, I think he did. I think he's saying that tariffs are a tax, which you can look at them that way. And there, you know, there is some consumer
pain.
Oh,
that's right. Sure.
Right.
We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Thank you very much. We got to all the letters. That's good. Terry Gibson, thank you very much. Chris Churchill, always a pleasure. Same
to
you, Jen Smith. And Alan, thank you. A quick reminder on the lockbox.
Let's go, everybody. We're going to need you, and we're going to need you now, and we need you bad. Let's go. Let's get the lockbox filled, because the news and what we do here is so important. We just can't afford to give up any time.
WAMC.org. We'll be right back.